Greetings, everyone, and welcome to the Law Hour and Editorial Review. The Law Hour is sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri. The Law Hour is an educational service in the public interest. I'm your narrator, George Gordon. Now, the Law Hour and Editorial Review is heard nationally on 29 AM and FM radio stations 7 days a week here in the United States and in more than 75 countries worldwide on the Internet. For more information about the Law Hour and Editorial Review, please visit my webpage at georgegordon.org. Again, that's georgegordon.org. The Law Hour and Editorial Review brings you important information about law news and current events, so stay tuned for tonight's special report on making money with hard money, right after this. Well, 3,300 years ago, Moses instructed our fathers, "You shall not have in your bag diverse weights, a great and a small. You shall not have in your house diverse measures, a great and a small, but you shall have a perfect and a just weight. A perfect and a just measure shall you have." Well, our founding fathers at the Constitutional Convention in 1787 followed this scriptural principle when they put into our federal Constitution, at Article 1, Section 10, these 17 words. They say, "No state shall make anything but gold or silver coin a tender in payment of debts." But in 1933, Franklin Roosevelt took our gold away, and in 1964, President Johnson took silver coin out of circulation. And in place of just weights and balances, these two presidents introduced our current practice of the first, second, and fifth planks to the Communist Manifesto into our monetary system. They gave us Federal Reserve notes in place of gold-backed treasury bills and clad coinage in place of silver coin. And now, in the intervening 70 years, we Americans have gone from being the world's number one creditor nation until today, we're the world's number one debtor nation. Now, who do you think were the better financial planners for our nation? Moses and our founding fathers, or Franklin D. Roosevelt and Lyndon Baines Johnson? Now, if you'd like to learn more about hard money and how to use it properly, it's another of the many lessons in my business school. And I conduct that school here twice a year at the law school, or it's on compact disc if you want to take a home schooling course. Now, if you'd like to learn more, why don't you call and order my free General Law CD package first. Now, that's a four-hour commentary on the law in general. It's educational, informative, entertaining. It's free of charge, and you can call and order yours right now by simply calling direct, 417-273-4967. Now, my business school is also available on compact disc for adult home study. If you're online, you can go to the website georgegordon.org, click onto the email machine, and then send an email request for that free General Law CD package. Again, that's georgegordon.org, or call direct, 417-273-4967. Now, if you send an email, be sure to include your mailing address. It doesn't go out email, it goes out through the snail mail. All right, last time we were talking about Franklin Sanders' book. It's actually a manual on trading silver and gold through arbitrage so that you can profit in ounces of gold or ounces of silver, not dollars of value. It's kind of a wild new idea. The book is entitled "Why Silver Will Outperform Gold 400% and the Professional Trading Secrets That Will Make the Most of Your Silver and Gold Investments." It's the only manual that I've ever seen. The diagrams for you, the premiums and discounts, and the ratios of gold and silver, that is, the value of gold to silver and silver to gold, leaving out dollars. You know, when God created the monetary system, He created it, and He did it by way of putting so much gold into the earth's crust and so much silver. Well, silver appears in the earth's crust at the ratio of 17.5 to 1. That is, there's 17.5 ounces of silver buried in the earth's crust for every ounce of gold. So the correct price for gold is 17.5 ounces of silver, and the correct price of silver is 1 ounce of gold by 17.5 ounces of silver. Now, that's based upon weight. Now, what we've done in this country, we created a Federal Reserve, and then we took our dollars, which were 371.25 grains of 999 fine silver. That's a weight. And we converted that to a value. Now, when you deal in values, you deal in inflation. You deal in illusion. What's the value of something today? Well, tomorrow it'll be something different. So when we use values, the value changes every day. When we use weights, it never changes. A pound is a pound is a pound. A pound today is the same amount that it was in 1700, 1800, 1900, and 2000. A pound is still 16 ounces. An ounce is still 480 grains. It never changes. It's always the same. So the trick then was to send you to public school and get you to accept value for weight. And they did. And we do. And we get robbed every time we do that. And that's because there's a basic and primary law that says thou shalt not steal. That's the basic law of property and property rights. Without it, you can't have property. In 1933, we abolished the law of property as it relates to gold. And we did it under House Joint, HJR House Joint Resolution 192. Now, Americans today don't know that because they go to public school and they haven't been educated, and Americans can't count. And that's not by accident, that's by design. I mean, if you people could count, you wouldn't deal in dollars. You would deal in ounces, pounds. You would deal in weights and measures. You'd deal in property rather than privilege. I mean, that's just common sense. But you're divorced from common sense because the public school is designed to dumb you down. About 1.5% of us are taught to think. About 10% of us are taught to partially think. We call those people professionals. And the rest of us are taught to work. So you have a worker economy. And people today work. And they get robbed. They get robbed by way of taxation, number one, and then they get robbed by inflation, number two. Now, in Exodus 20, verse 15, we have a law, a basic law, that says, thou shalt not steal. The abolition of all property in land is the first plank to the Communist Manifesto. So communism calls for the abolition of the right of property. The Bible calls for the establishment of the right of property. Now, a guy by the name of Gibbon wrote a book called The Decline and Fall of the Roman Empire, Edwin Gibbon. And he wrote that back in 1776, and he outlined five basic causes of the decline and fall of the Roman Empire. You know, that great Roman Empire, with all of its pagan splendor. And one of the five causes was the debasement of their currency, the debasement of their money. And so for the last 50 or 60 years, I mean, at least when I was a small boy, I was constantly reminded of Gibbon's Decline and Fall of the Roman Empire, and that if America continued on with this debasement of our money, the debasement of our religion and religious values, our moral values, America would go the way of Rome. And indeed, that's exactly what has happened. Now, the Huns have not attacked Washington yet, but they will. Just like the Huns attacked Rome. It's coming. We're just not there yet. Now, Rome collapsed in 476 A.D. So in 470 A.D., they were on the verge of it, but it hadn't happened yet. And we here in America are on the verge of it, but it hasn't happened yet. And over my lifetime, the last 60 years, we've been waiting for it. It takes a long time. It isn't something that happens overnight. The decline and fall of the Roman Empire didn't happen overnight. The decline and fall of Egypt, Babylon, Assyria, the United States, doesn't happen overnight, but it does indeed happen. And there are great dislocations, lots of death and destruction and loss of property and weeping and wailing and gnashing of teeth go along with these declines and these collapses. Now, Franklin Sanders, in Chapter 2, makes these observations concerning paper silver ain't silver. Many times, he says, I suspect that I am too circumspect, too delicate in my explanations, and that my mildness prevents me from making my point plainly and forcefully. So, I will for once speak plainly and to the point, and tell you just how the cow ate the cabbage. In bold letters, he says, paper gold ain't gold. Only physical gold is gold, and paper silver isn't silver, only physical silver is silver. And I want to emphasize that because people will call here constantly, every day. Somebody will call here and they'll say, well, I'm going to buy this silver or gold and we're going to keep it in this warehouse. And I say, well, okay. So when you call me and tell me, here's what I'm going to do, I'll just say, okay, fine. That's the normal way that people hold gold and silver. It's natural and normal for Americans to let somebody else hold their gold and silver because somebody else has been holding your money all of your life. You have credit cards, not money. You have checks and checking accounts. You don't have money, and that's because you're not competent or capable of handling and managing your own money. You have somebody do that for you. Why then would we expect you to take physical possession of your gold and silver? You wouldn't know where to put it, where to store it, how to handle it, how to take care of it. You need somebody, a guardian, to do that for you. You've had a guardian all of your life to take care of your money. So there isn't any reason to believe that you could take care of gold and silver money any more than you could take care of your checkbook money. Somebody else has to do that for you. So let me emphasize that if you're going to practice gold and silver, you have to take physical possession. If you don't, you don't have gold and silver. You just have another paper claim, just like you do on your checking account. You don't have the money, you have a claim upon some money that's in somebody else's vaults. And when this thing collapses and they can't pay, then they won't pay. And when they don't pay, you won't get yours. To give you an illustration, the world produces about 2,500 tons of gold every year. Now, somebody is in physical possession of that gold, but it's not you. Somebody has it. It's in somebody's vault, somebody's warehouse, somewhere. Somebody's got physical possession. Now, since most people don't want physical possession, they want a certificate. They want a receipt that says, I have so many ounces of gold over here in Joe's warehouse. Well, Joe, who has this silver and gold in the warehouse, issues you a receipt. Well, you know, every time he issues one of those receipts, it doesn't take very much money to print up a receipt. And he can sell those receipts. And so we've been doing that over the last 25 or 30 years. There's a lot of paper gold out there. There's a lot of gold receipts that are being held by a lot of people. And those people who hold those gold receipts, honest to God, believe that over there in Joe's warehouse, there's 52 ounces of gold that I own. That's my gold. The trouble with that is there's 15 other people out there that have a receipt on the same 52 ounces of gold, Joe. 15 other people. If you took all the gold production in the world today, it's already been pre-sold 15 years into the future. Now, take an economic collapse in the morning, and one of those 52 people, or five or six of them, will share that 52 ounces over there. Or more than likely, Joel will take the whole 52 ounces and let all 15 of you swing. Now, George Gordon takes physical possession. Franklin Sanders takes physical possession. Every trader that trades in gold and silver takes physical possession of the gold and silver. And that's because those of us that are traders are competent, skillful, educated, and trained professionals, and we can handle money. And unless or until you learn how to handle money, you ought not to mess around with gold and silver coin. There's no purpose or point in it. That's number one. If you've got a guardian taking care of your money in the bank, and you need a guardian to take care of your gold and silver, what have you gained? Either you're going to learn how to take care of it yourself, or it's not going to get taken care of. So Sanders points that out, and I just want to emphasize that, because before today is over, somebody's going to call, and they're going to tell me about their gold or silver, or, gee, Mr. Gordon, I'm really, really excited about this, and I'm going to buy this or that. Now, there's another thing that I want to point out. It's called numismatics. I'm breaking into Sanders Chapter 2, and I want to point out numismatics. Because nearly every day somebody calls me and they'll say, well, I've got this real neat, and they buy a bunch of them. They don't just buy one. They buy a bunch of these real neat coins. And these coins will cost $1,000, $2,000, $3,000, $5,000. I've had people call here and say, I paid $10,000 for this 1894 San Francisco $20 Double Eagle in MS65 condition, and it's $10,000. And I say, okay. Okay. Well, Mr. Gordon, how much will you give me for it? Well, let's see. Looking at today's quotations, I will give you $428 for that. And they gasp and they choke and they say, well, my God, I paid $10,000 for it. Well, is it George Gordon's fault that you paid $10,000 for a coin that has a real value of $430? Is that my fault that you overpaid? And then you will protest and you will say, but my coin is MS65. Well, that's real sweet. I don't have any MS65s, and I don't really care. Mine are all VF20s, and sometimes they're worse than that, and I buy commercial gold 20s, and I buy some pretty good 50s, you know. The 50s are probably MS60. I don't know if there's any MS65s. I imagine I could buy some proofs if I put my mind to it, wanted to pay the premium, but I buy the cheapest gold I can get because, let me explain it to you in these terms. Let's take your MS65, 1894S, $20 gold piece, and meld it down into a little gold blob. And then they ask me, well, what's that worth? Well, it's worth 90% of spot. That's because it's only got 9/10 of an ounce of gold to start with. That's right. It doesn't have a full ounce to start with. It's only got 9/10. Second, you got to pay somebody to do something with it. It's called your sandage charge. Every time you mint that coin into something else, you know, somebody's got to get paid for doing that. Shipping and handling is what you call it in the trade. Sandage is the official term. So you got to pay somebody to do that. So you're not even going to get, you know, you're not even going to get $360 for that little blob of gold from your 1894 San Francisco MS65 real neat coin. Now, I'm going to take a brand new 2004 $50 Double Eagle, and I'm going to meld it down to a little blob right next to yours. And I'm going to sell my little blob. Now, my little blob has 480 grains of gold, so I'm going to get paid about 90%, or about $360 for my little blob of gold, and you're going to get paid about $320 or $30 or $40 for your little blob of gold. I mean, in paper money. You know, the kind of money you take down to Walmart. Now, let me ask you this. Which of us made the better deal? So, my thinking on the matter is, if you want to buy numismatic coins and you want to spend $10,000 for one of these coins and put it into your little book, that's fine. Now, if you want to test this and find out what's the real value of this 1894 SMS65 coin, take it back to the dealer you bought it from, put it on the counter and said, write me a check. And he'll write you a check for about $7,500. So you're going to pay a 25% premium. 25% premium. Now, numismatic coins have a value, and they buy and sell in the marketplace every day, but they have a high premium. Very high premium. And if you ever get down to where you got to meld it and smuggle it out of the country or something like that, or lose it, well, then, you know, caveat emptor, you know, let the buyer beware. Now, you can buy Krugerrands today for about $430, $430 paper dollars. And these numismatic coins, they're just kind of all over the landscape. They've got books out here that tell you what they're worth, and it's like buying the Mona Lisa. It's like buying an artwork. It's a value. It's not a weight or measure. It's a value. It's blue sky. I say it's just garbage. I don't want it. And I feel sorry for you people that have bought these numismatic coins. You know, that's where reality's at. But don't expect me to make up the difference for your bad judgment or your mistake. That's not my fault. Now, the purpose for this series of programs is to smarten you up so that you can get the most ounces for your labor. Let me put it another way. Let's suppose that you're making $20 an hour. You got a pretty good job over here with some multinational corporation. And the price of gold today is about $430. Well, when you go to buy that $430 coin, you got to pay the guy 4% more than the spot price. So I take $430 times 0.04, and that's about $17.20. And the guy that buys the coin and delivers it to you has to make a little money on the deal, and a broker charges you about 4%. So it's going to cost you around $450. 450 frog skins. All right, now take 450, okay, and divide that by $20 an hour. And it takes you about 22 and a half hours to buy 1 ounce of gold. 22 and a half hours. All right, now, you want to save that 22 and a half hours worth of labor that you labored in 2004, and you want to save it for your old age so that you can spend it in the year 2052. You know, about 50 years from now, you want to spend that money. Now, if you store it in the bank, and if you could make 5% interest every year for the next 50 years, and if there's no economic collapse and everything goes along fine, you can probably maintain your purchasing power based upon the historical fact that from 1960 to 2004, that's 45 years. Inflation in this country has run just a little bit under 5%. So you could just maintain and save your purchasing power. Now, if you store your money in gold, and then you bury it in a hole in the ground, and you have physical possession of this gold, would you do better? Well, when gold peaked at $835 an ounce back in 1980, and when it peaked, you would have actually made a profit based upon what you had bought and paid for that gold back in 1930. Over that 50-year period, you'd actually made money. Now, if you bought the gold in 1980 and you kept it until today, I mean, you paid $800 an ounce for it and you kept it till today, you now have about 25% of the purchasing power of those dollars, because today the gold is only worth $400, half as much. And the purchasing power of the paper has gone down by 50% over the last 25 years. So, number one, you lost half because it went from 8 to 4, and then you lost half because now the purchasing power of the 4 is only 2. So you get 25% of your purchasing power. That's why God told you not to use unjust weights and balances, because it's very deceptive and it's very difficult for you to keep up with. Not impossible, but if you've been to public school, you probably won't be able to keep up with it. So you're going to have to train and educate yourself outside this public school forum if you want to be able to add and subtract, multiply and divide, and then calculate the purchasing power, that is, the number of hours that you work to buy 1 ounce of gold, and then save that gold for 50 years, and then take that gold coin and go buy something with it. Now, to give you an illustration, in 1930, a $20 double eagle cost $20. A $20 Federal Reserve note would buy a $20 double eagle. So if you took one $20 double eagle and you stuck it in a hole in the ground, and you took a $20 bill from 1930 or 33 and you stuck it in your top dresser drawer, now pull the two of them out and go down to Matt's suit shop and let's buy a suit. In 1930, a $20 bill would buy you a Hickey Freeman suit, a pair of wingtip shoes, socks, suspenders, a white shirt, and a tie. Easy. $20. Today, if you go down to John's suit shop or Matt's, you can go in with your $20 gold coin, convert it to $400 in Federal Reserve paper, and buy a Hickey Freeman suit, a pair of wingtip shoes, a shirt, tie, suspenders, and socks, just like you could have in 1930. Now, take your $20 bill, put it on the counter, and you might get the necktie. Because today, that $20 bill has 5 cents worth of purchasing power. In other words, the American dollar, the U.S. dollar, has lost 95% of its purchasing power, so it now takes a dollar to buy what a nickel would buy in 1930. So those of us that buy, sell, trade, save, use, and use the gold and silver standard, we practice, thou shalt not steal, and you shall not have an unjust weight or balance in your bag. In other words, we're practicing the law of God, law of Moses. The biggest complaint that I hear is that, well, when you buy this gold and silver and you put it in a hole in the ground, it just lies there and it doesn't make any interest. Well, that's correct, because it's against the law to practice usury and interest. It's another law. And all of you people that have been out here practicing usury and interest over the last 70 years have lost your shirts. Oh, yeah, there's a Donald Trump out there and a Soros and a Buffett. Yeah, there's a few guys that win. It's just like going to a casino. There's a few guys that win, but most of the people lose, and the casino makes most of the money. And when we deal in paper money, the Federal Reserve makes most of the money, and then there's a guy named Trump and Soros and Buffett, and they make some big scores, and all the rest of us lose our shirts. And that's the way life works. It's like playing the lottery. There are a few winners. One out of every 83 million. 83 million. The odds are 83 million to one that you're going to win the lottery. So have at it. Now, I don't buy lottery tickets, but I do buy gold and I do buy silver. And I can take my silver and my gold, and I can buy and sell and trade them, and I can double the number of ounces of my gold and silver. And I know of a lot of traders that do that, but I've never seen a trader who actually wrote a manual to tell you lay people how to do it. And Franklin Sanders is the first guy. So let me give you Frank's number here, name and number, and then you can get a copy of the book. I talked to him the other day. The book is $199, but you can have it for $54, $49 plus $5 shipping and handling. If you're a subscriber, or if you tell him that you heard about it on this program. So I'm going to do a 7-part series on this subject of gold and silver. And I want to do it for all of my own listeners, but also I want to share with you the only manual in existence that tells lay people how to trade gold and silver on the premiums and discounts, leaving out the value. We don't deal in value, we deal in ounces, we deal in weights and measures. We're going to trade gold for silver and silver for gold and gold for silver and silver for gold. And when we do that, over 4 trades, we're going to have twice as much gold and twice as much silver as when we started with. So you can take 1,000 ounces of silver. That's about $8,000 in round numbers. I think last night it was $7.39 an ounce. Now you got to pay a fee to the broker to deliver that to you. So it'll cost you about $8,000 Federal Reserve note dollars. And then you take those Federal Reserve note dollars and you put those into the silver. You buy the silver. And then when the premium changes, you trade it to gold. And when the premium changes, you change it to silver. And when the premium changes, you change it to gold. And when the ratios move back and forth and up and down, you make a net gain each and every time. Hang on, I'll be right back. All right, you're listening to The Law Hour, an editorial review sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri. You know, we Americans talk a lot about private business, and we use terms like private ownership, private property, and private rights. But we also use terms like stocks, bonds, negotiable instruments, licenses, and permits in our pursuit of profit and gain in our business transactions. Well, listen to this. Did you know that stocks and negotiable instruments are the exact opposite to private ownership? Bonds are the exact opposite to private property. Public business licenses are the exact opposite to private rights. Permits are the exact opposite to private business. And why is it that we see small business being subjected to such a constant barrage of attacks by our government at every level, from Washington to your hometown? And what can you do to protect your life, your liberty, and your property from these incessant attacks by OSHA, the EPA, the State Tax Commission, zoning and planning, the IRS, and the swarms of government agents and agencies who are eating out your substance? Well, you know, there's a lot you can do. And the first step is to inform yourself as to the legal alternatives that you have between public business and private business. Now, if you'd like to learn more about business, particularly private business, why don't you call and order my free general law CD package and let me tell you more about what it is that you're not supposed to know about private business. It's educational, entertaining, informative. Best of all, it's free of charge. You can call right now, the number 417-273-4967. Again, that's area code 417-273-4967. Now, if you're online, go to the website. It's georgegordon.org. Click onto the email and send me an email request for your free general law CD package. That's georgegordon.org, or call direct 417-273-4967. All right, we're talking about gold and silver, how to trade it, a manual written by Franklin Sanders, the money changer. You can call and get more information, or you can send a $54 bill to West Point, Tennessee, Post Office Box 178. The zip code is 38486. If you'd prefer, you can call first. The number is 888-218-9226. If you want that $54 price, make sure that you tell them you heard it here on the Law Hour. Or you can subscribe to the Money Changer and they'll sell it to you for the $54 and you don't have to tell them jack squat. And I recommend the Money Changer. In fact, about once a month I'll take an article out of the Money Changer and put it on the air, just like I do the Privateer. Those are the two letters that I recommend most highly. There are a lot of other economic newsletters out there, and I certainly don't want to slight anybody, you know, like a James Cook or a... Now, James Cook, see, he sells a lot of numismatic coins, and so does Don McElvain. And most of these newsletter writers, they make their money selling gold and silver, but they sell numismatic coins. And, of course, I don't recommend those, and neither does Sanders. Now, I don't blame McElvaney for selling numismatic. I mean, after all, if you can sell one coin and get a 25% premium, why would you want to sell run-of-the-mill coins for 4% premium? And, you know, just add it up. You know, you don't have to be a rocket scientist. There's more money in numismatic coins for the guy that's selling them. And it isn't dishonest. There's a market out there in numismatics. It's just that you have to spend 25 cents out of every dollar. You spend $10,000, buy the coin, and sell it back for $7,500. You buy a coin for $1,000 and sell it for $7.50. I would prefer to spend $450 on a coin. I'll show you what this is. If you got a pencil and paper, take it. I'm going to spend $450 today on a coin. The spot price is $4.30, and I got to pay about a $20 premium, so I'm going to pay $4.50. Now, that's called the sell price. Now, the buy price, excuse me, that's called the buy price, $4.50. Now, the sell price is going to be 4% under $430. Now, that, depending on your broker, he'll probably only charge you, you know, maybe half that, $10. But you're not going to get the spot price. You're not going to get $430 unless the market's really strong and there's no discount. In which case, they'll pay you spot, they'll charge you $4.50 and pay you $4.30. But generally speaking, you can plan on getting 4% less than the $430. So if spot's $4.30, times 0.96, you're going to get $412.80, or something a little better than that. So if you call the law school, I'll steer you on to a couple of three brokers. Now, most of you people are buying from dealers. Well, let's take a look at that for a second. Let me give you a couple of pointers. You've got coin dealers, and these coin dealers, they sell you one coin at a time, or they'll sell you 10 or 20. But they got to charge a little more money, so they charge up around 7%. 7%. So you take the spot price, that's the base price that's set by the Bank of England every morning at 10:30. And then it travels around the world to Hong Kong and San Francisco and New York. And that sets the price in paper, and that paper price changes every day. Now, most people, when they go to buy, they look at that spot price and they say, well, gosh, that's what I want to buy it at. Nobody buys at the spot price. The Bank of England is simply saying, we'll buy every ounce of gold that you can bring in here at $430. That's what they're telling you. That doesn't mean you're going to get $430 when you take it in there, because you got to pay the costs, transportation, cianage, brokerage commission. And so when you buy it, that broker is going to charge you 4% for one coin. Now, brokers will almost always have minimum purchases. So the broker that I use, or one of them, he has 4% on $2,500. Then when it's $5,000, it drops to 3.5%. At $10,000, it's 3%. At $100,000, it's 2%. So when you send him a check for $100,000 to buy gold, he's going to charge you a 2% commission rather than 4%. It's half. So the minimum purchase is $2,500. Now, let's try this. You go in and buy one coin. Well, it takes as much time, effort, and energy to sell you one coin as it does to sell you 20. In fact, it probably takes a whole lot more energy to sell you one coin, because he has to actually open the container and take one out. There's 20 coins to a container. You can just put the whole 20 on the counter and take your check. All right, so moral of the story is, the more you buy, the cheaper it gets. Well, now when you deal with a dealer, that's a coin dealer, he's charging 7%. When you deal with a broker, he's charging 4%. And when you're dealing with a numismatic dealer, he's charging you 25%. Now, do you want to pay a 25% commission? Or do you want to pay a 7% commission? Or do you want to pay a 4% commission? Or do you want to pay a 3% or a 2% commission? I mean, you know, it's like buying anything else, you know. The more you buy, cheaper it gets. Now, Franklin Sanders, I don't know what his prices are, and I'm not here selling coins. Remember, the law hour is a law school. And what we do here is we teach law. And I've got 8 of those schools that I sell. That's what I do for a living. I sell schools. I don't sell coins. One of the schools that I teach is my business school. And in my business school, we teach the Mosaic Law. We actually are on the gold and silver standard. My students, once they leave here, typically go on to the gold standard and stop using paper. And yes, we can buy at Walmart just like everybody else. And I've got electric lights and power, and I got running water in my house. You know, I'm not living back in the Stone Age. And then I'm not paying an income tax. I don't pay Social Security. And then on top of that, I'm not suffering from inflation. And so if that's of interest to you, well, then call and ask for my free general law CD package. Let me tell you more about it. Meanwhile, back on the farm, here's Franklin Sanders. Let me give you the name and address again. It's West Point, Tennessee. West Point, Tennessee. Zip code is 38486, and the post office box is 178. Telephone number is 888-218-9226. Now, that's to get the book. Now, if you want to buy gold and silver from Franklin Sanders, you know, he's a dealer or a broker. Now, I don't know which. Quite frankly, I haven't bought from Franklin, so I don't know. Or maybe I bought from him in the past. I can't remember, but I don't know, and I'm not advertising Franklin Sanders as a broker. There's lots of brokers out there. Why don't you learn how to get the best price? Because after all, that's what Sanders is selling here. He's selling you a manual on how to get the best price and take the best profit that you can get off of the spread in the gold-silver ratio and the discounts and premiums. And this is the manual that tells you how to do it. And the reason that I got kind of excited about it and said, well, let me put this on the air for my listeners, is because nobody else does this. Don McIlvaney is doing this, but Don McIlvaney isn't writing a manual to tell Joe Sixpack out on Main Street how to do it. Don is selling numismatic coins and selling them to you and making a 25% premium. Listen, you can't make any profit paying 25% premium. And Sanders here will show you how to actually buy this stuff at a discount. Now I got to tell you a little story over here. I've got a broker that I do business with quite often. And I have a constant buy order in. It's not working now, but in the past, from 1985 until 1998. And my broker, Frank, would call me and he'd say, George, I've got some silver that I've got a client that wants to sell. And the discount is. So I bought discount silver all through the 80s and 90s. So when the spot price of silver was $5, I would buy it for $4.75. When the spot price was $4.50, I would buy it for $4.25. I would buy it for a discount. And so he would call me. And what we are circling sharks. Some guys got some money needs. And so I would take my paper money and I would get rid of it and put it into silver coin, take physical possession, bury it in a hole in the ground. Now, by doing that, take a look. The price of silver today is $7.39. So I made a profit from $4.50 to $7.39. Can you see that? Take $7.50 and I paid $4.50. I made a $3 profit. In paper money, I made a $3 profit. Most of you can follow that. That's chicken feed. I'm not interested in that paper profit. Hell, I've got silver I paid 10 frog skins for back in the 80s when the price was going down. I've been buying silver at $10, $9, $8, $7, $6. I bought some silver one time in here for $3.83 an ounce when silver was about... I see in Sanders' newsletter here, he says that at one time it went down to $3.50. I didn't remember that. But I got some that was just a tad under $4 an ounce. Now, almost all of my silver cost $4, $5, $6. In fact, when students would go to school here and the price of silver was $4.50, I was a big guy. I'll give you $5 credit. Pay a premium for your silver. Put it on the counter. And a lot of you students, can you remember that? When you came to school here, you put your silver on the counter at $4.50, and I gave you $5 credit. I paid you a 50-cent premium. You remember that? Now the price of your silver is up to $7.50. Now, that means that I made a $2.50 profit so far, and that's in paper. But I'll tell you, what's more important and what's more exciting is using the ratio and the discounts to turn 50 ounces of silver into 100 ounces of silver and turn 100 ounces of silver into 200 ounces of silver. I think that there's a whole lot more profit in dealing in just weights and balances than there is in dealing in value. And that's what this manual is all about. So to illustrate our point here, paper gold isn't gold. Paper silver isn't paper. Receipts are receipts. Paper is paper. Gold stocks may offer great leverage and they may make you a ton of money if gold goes up. But gold stocks are not gold. And options will give you superb leverage and safety to boot, and they can make you a ton of money if gold or silver goes up. But options are not gold and options are not silver. Futures give you huge leverage and great action and great profits if you're on the right side of the future. But futures are not silver and they're not gold. They're paper. Certificates may be an easy, convenient, and even low-cost way to own gold or silver and store it in Perth or Zurich or New York, but certificates aren't gold. Certificates are not silver. Promises are not gold. Promises are not silver. Certificates are not gold. Certificates are not silver. Debts aren't silver. Debts aren't gold. Stocks aren't silver. Stocks are not gold. Only gold is gold, and only silver is silver, and only gold and silver in your grubby little fist is gold and silver. And what you can hold in your hand is what you've got. And silver or gold that is not in your hand is not silver, and it's not gold. Now that's a direct quotation from Franklin Sanders. And let me say, amen. That's reality. That's business. There are businessmen and there are business boys, and there's a whole lot more business boys out there than there are businessmen. Now, people laugh at me and they make fun of me and they mock me, and that's fine. Have at it. But I'm one of the traders that can trade gold and silver and make more ounces out of it, and Franklin Sanders is another one. He's what we call a bimetallist. Now, I'm one of those too, and I've never said much about my belief in bimetallism. And the reason for that is that people just laugh at you and make fun of you, and so I don't like getting laughed at and made fun of, so I don't say very much about it. Never have over the years. Sanders has. He's been writing about it for many years, which is why I've recommended Sanders over many others. Not that these other newsletter writers now aren't savvy people and aren't smart, but they're savvy and smart for themselves. They're not savvy and smart for you. There's nobody out there that's writing a manual to say, well, here's the inside secrets. Well, not until Sanders did. I never wrote a manual. I don't think I was ever smart enough to write it, number one. But number two, I didn't have any interest in it. Why would I want to write a manual? I'm not in the gold brokerage business. At least Franklin has a motive for it. He might sell you some gold and silver and make some commissions. And he wrote a book, and maybe he'll make a few bucks on the book. But let me say this. Nobody else is doing that. Not that I've ever seen, not that I've ever heard. Now, for nearly the past decade, the silver and gold markets have suffered from a sleight of hand with paper, silver, and gold. Promises, piled on promises that nobody can meet. And when the paper hits the fan, and it will surely hit the fan, the scramble will be on for real physical metal. Not paper, not promises, not stocks, but rather real physical metal. Now, once you have a real physical position in gold and silver, then branch out into stocks or options or futures or certificates or whatever you want. If you like to gamble, paper is the way to go. But first, build that physical position, because all that flutters ain't gold and all that floats ain't silver. Now let's take a look at trading and investing. And there's a difference between investing and trading. Basically, both are the same, buying something in the hope that it will gain in value, or selling something in the expectation that it's going to lose its value. However, these two actions differ in time. Investing looks over a longer time frame, usually 1 year or more. We call those people investors. Trading over a short time frame, that's less than a year or even as little as a few minutes, is called a trader. Now, there's different personalities. You know, all of us have a different personality, and any investor has to recognize his own strengths and weaknesses. Traders and investors have two very different personalities. Investors don't change their assets very often, so they're more interested in fundamentals, the trends or circumstances, supply, demand, demographic, economic conditions. That change very slowly, but they change steadily. Now, they invest with the primary trend. Traders, on the other hand, have a very short time horizon. They're interested in technical market conditions to help them predict short-term moves, short-term trades signaled by technical analysis. The market might be moving with or against the primary trend, and the move might last hours or days or weeks, but it's all the same. The trader only aims to jump in and out quickly. Trouble is, trading and investing require two different personalities. Good traders are calm, fairly well-satisfied people who are very objective. Acting quickly to change directions doesn't ruffle their feathers, and they stay focused on what they're doing and they ignore everything else. Investors, on the other hand, are slow to change, and once they sell an investment, they're very unlikely to climb back in. Trading is not for them. Obviously, investing and trading are very different undertakings, and both aim at the same goal, that's making a profit. Business is here to make a profit. It's the only purpose for business, is making a profit. If you employ somebody in the process of your business enterprise, that's a collateral event. It's not a primary event. And making products or goods or services for the marketplace is not the purpose for business. It's just a necessary cost of goods sold in the business process of making profits. So obviously investing and trading are very different undertakings, and both aim at the same goal, and that's making a profit, but with totally different methods. As different as planting a crop and robbing a bank. Not that either trading or investing is somehow less moral than the other, because it isn't. Now, trading and investing require different vehicles. Since investments are not changed very often, they can bear larger transaction costs. Because traders change positions very often, they have to keep their transaction costs to a minimum. When you're trading gold and silver investments means physical gold and silver or even precious metal stocks. Trades means futures or options, and futures and options carry lower transaction costs than physicals. However, they also don't confer the same benefit of personal physical possession that physicals do. Now, investment mistakes, trend and timing come into play. Most investors founder by ignoring this proverb. The trend is your friend. So identify the primary trend in the market and then stay with that direction. All right, let me pause here for a moment and make an editorial comment. It was pretty obvious after silver peaked in 1980 and started down that the bull market, which began back in the 1960s and lasted until 1980, was over. That the trend was now down. So, I'm an investor, and I'm a trader. I do both, invest and trade. I've got a dual personality. I guess you'd call me schizophrenic. Well, I guess Sanders would call me schizophrenic. So I started buying silver. Now, I buy gold also, but primarily I put my savings account. You know that money that most of you people put into Social Security? Well, I didn't put my money into Social Security. I put my money into silver. That's what I saved my retirement in, was silver. And so I started buying silver. Now, the silver, when I started buying, was $15 an ounce. And it went down steadily to 10, 9, 8, 7, 6, 5, 4, 3. Well, it didn't go down to 3, but it went down to 383. I think that's the cheapest that I ever bought it. So, I have been buying and accumulating my retirement savings in silver since 1980. Let's see, this was 25 years. So, I've been, while most of you have been investing in your Krogs and your 401ks and Social Security and stocks and bonds, I've been investing in silver. So, people laughed and made fun of me and they said, "You fool, you blind, you nitwit, can't you see that the primary trend of silver is down?" Yeah, I could see the primary trend of silver was going down. And I'm not a prophet, so I could not foresee that silver was going to go down to $4 an ounce. I didn't know if it was going to bottom at 15, 10, 9, 8, 7, 6, 5. I didn't know where the bottom was. I just knew that it's getting cheaper and cheaper. And so as silver got cheaper and cheaper, I bought more and more of it. And so now I'm sitting on a pile of silver. And now the trend is up. We're now in a bull market. And I don't know how high it's going to go. But I do know this, it's going to go higher than $15 an ounce, which is what I paid for it. Now remember, I wanted to save my money from my old age retirement. So I wanted to save my hours of labor. You know, in 1985 I had some hours of labor, and I saved them in physical silver. And then in 1990 I saved some physical hours of labor, and I put that into silver. Now, meanwhile, the price of the paper dollars has been consistently going down. So, when I took a $1980 dollar and I bought $15 silver, see, the price of silver in 1980 peaked at $54 and then it just nosedived and leveled off at $15. And then in 1981, 82, 83, it went from 15 to 14 to 13. You know, it was a slow, steady erosion. So I waited until the market bubble burst, and it did. And when the market bubble burst, it went down to 15. And I said, well, that's probably the bottom. It wasn't, but I said, well, I don't know where the bottom is. I mean, if 15 was the bottom, well, then it was going to go up to 20, 25, and 30. If $4 was the bottom, then it's going to go up to 20, 25, or 30. You know, at some point in the future. And I don't need the money, and I'm going to save it. Now, I could save it in my savings account. Now, you people that were saving $1980 have lost 50% of your purchasing power. So you worked an hour in 1980, 81, and 82, and now in the year 2004, 5, and 6, you're going to get 30 minutes worth of return for it. Well, I decided that wasn't such a good value, so I got out of paper back in the 1980s. I quit the paper trip. Now, I got off of values and onto weights and measures. I still have my physical $15 an ounce silver. And my physical $15 an ounce silver today is only worth $7.39. But you see, the difference is I didn't take paper back in 1985 and let somebody else hold my silver. I've got it in my grubby little fist right now, today. I'm still hanging on to it. And so I can ride the primary trend down, and then I can ride the primary trend back up again. Now this time when it goes back up, it'll go back up to $43.75. But when the pendulum swings, it doesn't go up to 43.75. It goes way beyond that, just like it did in 1980. It didn't, you know, the price of silver didn't go up to $15. It went up to 50 and then swung back to 15. And it'll do the same thing here. The price of silver will swing up to 75, 80, 100. Well, I don't know where it's going to top out. And then it'll swing back down to something below its median average. We'll show you more about that next time. The pendulum swings, and it's this swinging of the pendulum, this constant swinging of the pendulum, is where the profit is. Well, we're just about out of time. We'll take it up here again next time. You've been listening to The Law Hour, an editorial review sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri. For more information about the Gordon Law School and the Law Hour, please go to my website. That's georgegordon.org. The Law Hour is carried worldwide on the Internet, and all of these Law Hour programs are archived on the Internet by title and date, and they can be downloaded. The Law Hour is an educational service brought to you in the public interest, and the Law Hour brings you timely reports of law, science, education, politics, religion, news, and current events 7 days a week. Well, we're just about out of time. The signal is on. It says my time is up. We'll have to leave it right there. So I'll see you back here tomorrow night, same time, same station. God willing, of course. So until then, good night, friends.